Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Welcome to Local Food Connections, a show about the power of locally grown food to connect us more strongly with our communities and the lands we inhabit. Local Food Connections is brought to you by Local Food Connect. We're broadcasting from Wurundjeri country and pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging. We respect the enduring strength of First Nations people and acknowledge their long heritage of agriculture and care for the land on which we live. This morning, it is my pleasure to be joined by Anthimos. Anthimos has been sleeping rough for 2.5 years in the Shire of Nillumbik, dumpster diving for most of his food and, which is really of interest to us, developing a unique insight into local networks and creating networks as well. Today, Anthimos has brought with us his friends Molly Rose. Hi, Molly.
Morning.
And Amber, who is Amber's a boisterous bloodhound, really big galoomph of a dog, beautiful big dog, and has just settled down miraculously as soon as we put the mics on. She just lay down on the floor really quietly. So thank you, Amber, and thank you very much, Anthimos, for coming in.
It's my pleasure, Anne.
How's your morning been so far?
I got up early, and my plan was that I was going to come in just before the show had to be. That was not to be because Amber noticed that I was awake and decided to grumble at me and say, well, now that you're awake, we have to go for a walk. So, we spent the first couple of hours of the day walking around and just wandering into the city.
Uh-huh. Did you get in on public transport?
Yeah, two buses. The Kinetic Bus Service is really lovely. Yeah. I've had a lot of interactions with their management in terms of ensuring that accessibility is something that's always been improving. If you ever travel with an assistance animal, bus lines like Kinetic are very favourable to that now. They've recently updated their signage on the buses to make sure their drivers are aware of it. So it's a work in progress, but it's always on the improvement.
Fantastic. And they just ask if Amber's a therapy assistance dog or whatever, and you just say yes, and she doesn't have to wear any special gear or...
There's no uniform code across the country, which is a bit of a bugbear for many people. There's probably been a decade of debates back and forth about how that should go. But the general rule of thumb is if you've got a disability, if you need an assistance animal to alleviate the effects of your disability, if the assistance animal is otherwise well-behaved and hygienic, basically, you're all good to go. And as I like to tell people, having an assistance animal is much like having a driver's license. It's not just a blank check to do whatever the fuck you want. You still got to behave yourself. I can't just, wave my driver's license at a police officer, I'm licensed to drive, and go hectic on the highway. Yeah. So it's the same basic principle.
Yeah, yeah. Great. Let's just talk straight away about food. You've got so much to offer. We've already had several conversations and you've got so much of interest to say, but we're just going to narrow it down as much as we can today about basically food, but also just localism and local networks. And I think you're a firm believer in the importance of change happening at the local community level. But let's go back to food. Tell us about dumpster diving.
Well, I've been dumpster diving practically my whole life. Raised in a family with five other siblings, with my father on a disability pension from before I was born. So to me, it just was a natural thing that you don't waste food. And I was, of course, raised in a Greek family, and you just don't waste food. Like, it's just unacceptable. If you made yourself a chicken roast, the next day the bits of chicken would go into a stock pot and you'd be making chicken soup. Like, it just, nothing gets wasted. So that was the environment and climate I was raised in. So by the time I got to this most recent bout of rough sleeping, it was a natural thing for me to just go, well, back to dumpster diving, that's just life. But the most important reason I did it was when it occurred to me that I was eating top quality produce and food that even the locals and local police were saying, your dogs eat better than us. And I said, well, yeah. So I thought, why would I waste money on food when I could save the money for things that are a bit more difficult to get than food? And in Australia, it's particularly alarming that about a third of the food this country produces ends up in landfill. And to really highlight how evil that is, Australia is still, with that amount of food waste, one of the top few leading food exporters in the world. So we're throwing out enough food to feed literally hundreds of millions of people. We've got 1.2 million children going to bed hungry every night. It's according to the Smith family. They used the same voiceover ad that they used in the 90s, where that statistic was a million children. And the shameful thing about that is we could easily feed all the children in the country and still throw out tens of millions of people's worth of food if that's what we wanted to do. So I'm a firm believer that there is actually no cost of living crisis. I don't believe that there actually is a cost of living crisis at all. I think there's a cost of giving crisis, where food could be given away at a cheaper price point. And when you factor in that our farmers are getting shortchanged at the gate when they're selling their produce to the supermarkets, they were just earlier this week pleading for an increase of buying prices from the supermarkets. Both the majors, Woolworths and Coles, have made record profits over the last few years. There's absolutely no reason for why they can't pass on some of that profit to our farmers to make sure they're not doing it as tough as they are. Farmer suicide rates keep growing primarily because of the stress on them. People keep talking about how we should care about where our food comes from, and yet when it comes to doing the action, that's where we're lacking. Rather more pointedly, we've got this last year or so, the ACCC has finally taken the two big supermarkets, Woolworths and Coles, to the federal courts to try to get orders that they cannot throw out food. Something that we really should have done years ago. It's already a thing in France. There are laws passed where you cannot throw out food.
What a simple solution to that problem. It's just against the law, right?
Right.
If it was just against the law, well, strictly, they'd have to get creative about it.
Strictly speaking, it already is against the law. Strictly speaking, like, for example, I document when I do my dumpster diving. I've got on my LinkedIn profile photography of the Cleanaway and the Veolia bins. So Cleanaway is the waste company that services Coles and Veolia services Woolworths. Both of those companies have clear signage on the bins saying that you're not supposed to throw out food that's still packaged in plastic, no metals, no glass. Basically, don't contaminate the organic waste, because if they are going to reprocess the organic waste, at least make sure it doesn't have contaminants in it. Otherwise, it has to go to landfill. The irony is, not only are the supermarkets failing to reduce the food waste, when they are claiming to, well, we're recycling into organic, they're not even making sure their organic bins are clean and done properly. Mm-hmm. Now, in some suburbs, it's better than others. For example, down at the southeast, I'm familiar with a lot of the supermarket managers who have got now a 7-day program for the food to be collected there rather than getting thrown out and wasted. Ironically enough, in the more affluent suburbs, including the area I'm living in Ilovik Shire, there tends to be a lot of vocalism about it. It's very progressive and hippie attitude, and yet far less people are actually turning up. And so we end up having this bizarre scenario where the supermarkets and managers, including Coles Customer Care and Coles Sustainability teams and Woolworths Sustainability teams, they're telling me, we want people to come and collect it. We want to hand this out. We do not want to throw it in the dumpsters. We don't want to get rid of it. But with a shortage of people to turn up, with a shortage of community organisations to turn up, they can't just hand things over to, say, an individual such as myself. Because I'm an individual, there's certain continuity of business that happens. There's certain safety protocols. There's all of that that has to be managed. And then, there's the public image. It just does not look good for a supermarket to be preferentially favouring one person when they could be feeding the whole community. Thankfully, because Ilovik Shire is a very progressive community, we've had very promising meetings with a whole host of organisations, including all the faith-based organisations. Vicar Yvette out at St. Mark's Anglican Church has been wonderful in hosting meetings with a lot of local organisations, including Lions Eltham and Rotary and Diamond Creek Rotary and all the faith-based groups in the area. There's, of course, a couple of lovely women, Anne Hutchison and Diana Worrell. They've been doing their little link food program, that's Love in the Name of Christ, for over 30 years now, where they hustle and get food to persons in need on a weekly basis. And, of course, the big shortage is getting volunteers in the community to step up and make sure that there is somewhere to receive those food items and get them distributed to those in need. I've had people say to me, well, aren't you worried about the food safety aspects of it? Well, I'm still here over 2 years later, primarily subsisting off dumpster diving.
Yeah.
I've worked in the slaughter industry and food processing industry. I've worked in pretty much every segment of the food supply chain. So I know what's safe and what's not. I know how to take adequate precautions.
Well, we all do, don't we? You just rely on your sense of smell and your sense of taste.
And you take sensible precautions. Like a whole cut of meat is going to tend to be safer than, say, ground meat, any minced meat or anything like that.
Okay, less exposed to the air and all that. Yeah.
Well, it's the nature of the bacteria on a whole cut of meat will only penetrate maybe a few millimetres on the outside of the surface. Yeah. You can trim that off or, you know, cook that off. Whereas minced, once the bacteria is minced still in, it's mixed in with the meat. So that's where you got to just use your sense about things, use basic food safety protocols. And of course, what I point out to people, well, if we prevented it from landing in the dumpster to begin with, you wouldn't even have that issue.
Yeah, look, it was such a comprehensive description of the whole system you've just given us there. It's almost like I should just shut down this, my role in this show, and just get you on saying that sort of stuff every week. That kind of covers it. And I just want to double back a bit to the supermarket saying that they want to give the food away. They don't want to waste it. Why on earth are they buying so much then? And why are they not paying farmers? Why not buy less and pay farmers more for the food?
We could go on that topic for a couple of decades if you like, but we've only got a couple of minutes on it. So,
well, what's your take on it?
Very briefly, it's a combination of economics and social pressure. So
the social pressure, so everyone can get a big range of any food they want anytime from anywhere in the world in the supermarket,
well,
right?
Well, part of it is that. Part of it is this acclimatisation of luxury living. I will admit that there is a certain Spartan type of existence that comes with dumpster diving or even clearance shopping, or essentially it's buying seasonal.
Mm-hmm.
So dumpster diving is essentially the most extreme or hardcore of seasonal food eating that you're going to get, aside from being a hunter-gatherer and just going back to our roots. And what that basically means is, instead of trying to say, well, I'm going to ship in whatever I want because this is what I want, you say, look around and say, what food do I have available? What resources do I have available? I'm going to use those resources first. Now, when it comes to a very simple example, the basics of milk and bread. Back in the 90s, the supermarkets introduced cheap bread, driving out with competition against local bakeries. Now, I remember growing up in the 90s where if you went to the bakery first thing in the morning, you'd get the freshly baked bread, and that was your most expensive bread you're going to get because it came hot out of the oven. Then after the bread cooled, you might get the second best bread. By the end of the day, you'd get the day-old bread. A day later, the two-day-old bread, and so on. And then eventually you'd buy a dollar for your three- or four-day-old bread, or it gets ground up into breadcrumbs for you to use for your chicken parmas at home and your schnitzels and all that. Now, along came the supermarkets, and they say, well, what we're going to do is we're going to offer baked fresh every day. So, they, of course, they have big contracts with Tip Top Bakeries and other large manufacturers to industrial scale produce the bread. Your local bakery just can't compete with that scale. But also, we can't compete with our scale of that as in consumers, because the reality is you're now going to have these dumpster loads full of bread. And the argument goes, oh, well, we then give that back to farmers. And the farmers come along and they say, well, you know, we're giving it the food back to the farmers. The problem is that's just not efficient. And we know that's not efficient. But which consumer, when they go into a supermarket, is going to buy the day or two or three-day-old bread?
Yeah, that's it.
When they can get the fresh bread. So a lot of it is our relationship with food and not just the supermarkets. The economies of scale make sense for what the supermarkets are doing. They're going to be responding to consumer demand. But a lot of that consumer demand has been manufactured from a social pressure to have the so-called best.
Can I just stop you there? Because that's a point I really, really want to come back to. We're just going to have a little break and we'll just be back in a few minutes. So I really want to come back to that point. I want to drop food, not bombs. Hot trains, bottles, give it every info shop. I want to give free therapy out in the park. Go to free school, just contact rock. Drop food, not bombs. When I was new to Melbourne, I found a Food Not Bombs flyer on the road. And I had like this fist with a carrot, and carrots are my favorite vegetable. Yeah, I think they were asking for help doing stuff, and I got in touch.
We, I guess, rescue food
that would otherwise go to waste.
I like the aspect of sharing food and not making anyone feel obligated to pay anything for it.
We make a real point at Food Not Bombs of involving everyone who wants to be involved in whichever part they want to be involved in.
For more information, go to fnbmelb.noblogs.org. Food Not Bombs is a 3CR supporter.
Little boxes on the hillside, little boxes made of ticky-tacky, little boxes on the hillside, little boxes all the same.
I'm sick of the little boxes. Aren't you too? Do you want to live in nourishing, green neighbourhoods where we share and care for one another and our precious planet? Are you sick of greedy people gatekeeping better futures from the rest of us? Then listen to Kill Your Lawn and Kick Your Fence every fortnight on a Friday at 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. on 3CR with myself, Amy, and the wonderful people taking back their cities.
And they all look just the same.
This is a Local Food Connection show on 3CR 855 kHz on your AM radio dial and 3CR on digital radio. You can also visit the 3CR website and listen to the live streaming of the show. Today I'm chatting with Anthimos, and Anthimos has given us a really comprehensive description of the food system, which has been amazing to listen to. But I just want to take you back, Anthimos, to the very first thing, one of the very first things you said at the beginning of the interview, which was there's not a cost of living crisis. You know, wow, you know, this is, that's an incredibly radical thing to say, but I think you've got something very interesting to say about that. So basically, if I'm right, tell me if I'm right, are you saying that it's that people's expectations are too high, or the cost of living, a conventional lifestyle in this country, is too high, in the sense that having a mortgage, paying off your car and all that, and getting non-seasonal food shipped from everywhere, that's what's too hard?
No, I'd say it's even simpler than that. And okay. The reason, what my opinion is being radically... See, I practice what I call radical honesty and radical openness.
Yes.
To be clear, before anyone jumps in and says, oh, well, you're only saying that because you've got a fixed income or whatever... I don't even receive any government payments, so I'm not on Centrelink payments. Haven't been for nearly 10 years now. Went through the pandemic as a person with disability, working in the food processing industry. And I want to be clear that that's not a moral question for me. If there are persons out there, and there are many of them, who depend on Social Security payments to survive, that's not a shameful thing. That's just a fact of the community looking out for community members. And I've got a very firm opinion that if, as long as we make sure the most marginalised and vulnerable in our communities are looked after and have access and inclusion, then by default the rest of us have that.
Can I just take you back then?
When it comes to the food...
You keep going, Antimos.
That's right. So when it comes to the food question, it's not that I think our expectations are too high. If anything, they're too low. Our expectations are far too low. Where people have an attitude that you can't have a good quality of life with good quality food unless you're living some sort of MasterChef or My Kitchen Rules sort of lifestyle. And the reality is that those reality TV cooking shows have really tainted people's relationship with food. Take, for example, oxtail soup. Oxtail soup or fish head soup or any soups or stews or meals that were prepared from offcuts of meat or fish or leftover vegetables were traditionally the fare of working-class, poorer families who just had to get by. Back in the 90s, you could get oxtail for... you know, pennies on the pound. It was a very cheap cut of meat. It was a way that families could get by and survive, feed a whole large family. Now you see it in fancy restaurants. Why? Because people have got an elitist attitude with food. You got quinoa coming in from South America. Working class families in South America now can't get their staple grain that is adapted for growing in South America. It's not adapted for growing in Australia. That's why we don't grow quinoa in Australia. Quinoa gets imported all the way from the other side of the world, and it gets touted as a superfood. Well, we have plenty of local superfoods. If anyone doubts it, you can have a meet up with any of the local Wurundjeri people in the area. They'll tell you all the local superfoods, from daisy yam to warrigal greens to all of it. And they didn't seem to have an issue with their physique and health and lifestyle. And remember, they didn't have 24 snap fitness gyms. They had get out in the real world and go dig up your daisy yams. That's how you got your workout. So it's not that our expectations are too high. Our expectations are far too low. Our expectations of ourselves are far too low. People are talking about what's the government going to do about it. We are our own government. Every person is supposed to govern their own lives. That's what bodily autonomy is. That's what why consent is so important. And if you consent to have a relationship with food, then you're going to consent to have a healthy relationship with food. If you're not having a healthy relationship with food, then the first person you should be looking at, or the first person I should be looking at, is myself. I shouldn't be worrying about, you know, what Anthony Albanese is doing up in Canberra, or what Jacinta Allen is doing in Spring Street, or even what my local shire council is doing up the road in Greensboro. I've got to look at myself. What am I doing about it? So when it comes to my food activism, for instance, I'm not telling everyone else to jump in a dumpster. I'm the one jumping in dumpsters, getting the food out there. And, of course, I get more food than I need for myself, so I then distribute that food to anyone and everyone who wants it and who needs it. And it's a very simple philosophy to me. The expectations we have to start with our practicing. If we're thinking so-called radical thoughts or speaking so-called radical speech or acting in so-called radical ways, the real thing I would point out, well, if I'm so radical about what I'm doing with food, then what is the rest of the country's relationship with food? How is the rest of the country comfortable that year on year, decade on decade, since the 90s to now, food waste has gone increasing on a per capita and on an absolute basis? We had the so-called war on waste a couple of decades ago on the ABC radio and ABC TV. They'd done a documentary, reality sort of docu-series about that. And since that time, the waste and overconsumption has only increased per capita. And people will insist to me that they're not the ones contributing to it, which we know statistically has to be a lie.
Yeah, that's just...
It's a statistical falsehood. We can't have waste going up at an ever-increasing rate. And then, of course, we have the apologetics by the bureaucracy and politicians who will say, oh, well, China and India consume more than us. Well, of course they consume more than us. There's over a billion of them in each of those countries. But if you look at it at a per capita level, Australians are consuming resources, including food, at the rate that if our population was equalised on a per capita basis, we'd be 400 million Chinese. So to try to blame China for the overconsumption is ridiculous. Now, our waste alone, if we just cut out just the waste of food alone in this country, we could meet all our carbon guidelines, all our environmental targets. All of our food security issues would be wiped away. The reduction of fuel consumption for transport of that would be reduced. Basically, we could all be living a really, really elegant, prestigious, glamorous lifestyle. So I don't think our expectations are too high. I think they're far too low.
Right. Thank you for that. That's very interesting. But I'm just going to chuck another idea in there, shelter. So the problem for so many Australians is they're paying far too much for housing. It's out of their price range to have a house. What do you say to that? Because that's part of the cost of living, isn't it? The food and shelter are the two big things. What's your take on that?
Well, the shelter question is a really curious one, because Australia has for decades now had larger than the global average in terms of housing space. So we actually have more housing per capita than any other country in the world, which is really bizarre when you factor in that a lot of other countries are starved for space. Like, take countries like Singapore, an island nation. And by island, they really are an island. Australia's a bit more of a continent. In the early to mid-20th century, your typical size of house in Australia was under 12 square, and you'd have families of 4 to 6 comfortably living in those homes. I remember speaking to Ray Crosley, a Vietnam War veteran, who described his upbringing in an outback home that was a single room. Australians have become accustomed to a size of house that is just not in keeping with our means.
Our requirements.
Right, and it's even worse than that. Is not only have we got much larger houses, I think it's over 25 squares now, the average house size, we've got far lower occupancy per house and residence. Here in Victoria alone, if you look at the prosper.org.au website, that organisation has done comprehensive research on speculative vacancies for decades now, and they've estimated by water rate usage rates alone that something like 10% or more of the housing stock and residences available in Victoria are vacant. And it deliberately kept vacant.
Say that again, what percentage?
Over 10%.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And to put that in perspective, that basically means that all homelessness, primary, secondary and tertiary homelessness, could be cured overnight.
Mm-hmm.
There's absolutely no reason for it. It's done for a single purpose, and that's because the generations are held at tension. When, in my opinion anyway, when superannuation was introduced, there was a whole cohort of Australians who weren't going to benefit from superannuation because they were not going to have time to accumulate retirement savings by the time they hit retirement age. So the governments of Australia came up with a clever idea. They introduced the idea, we'll just buy another house, and that will become your retirement savings. Now, that works very well for a third of the older generation of the population, but it doesn't work so well for a third of the younger generation. So now it puts us in not just the class warfare that's been going on for decades, but you now have an intergenerational war that goes on, a divide that can't be bridged. And that's an obscene thing to do. We can't have a society that is treating one another's basic needs as something to be contested over. And that's where things are at. Now, just earlier this year when I was in at a federal circuit court hearing, I had a federal justice describe me as a fervent and articulate advocate for the rights of the homeless, and then went on to say in that concluding paragraph, however, this is not the correct vehicle for the vindication of the rights of such people.
What's and not that, the courts?
And that's where the language has gone to. We have a language of describing one another as such people.
Yeah, geez.
Why are we such people when someone is homeless? Why are we such people when someone is a single mother trying to raise her children? Why are people being categorised and lumped in as such people?
Yeah, yeah.
And how does that speech affect the way we look at one another? And we know what it is, because as I said to that federal justice, and I'm on record as saying this, and I'll go into the federal courts again and say this, that, you know, I can argue these questions across multiple conventions around the world, multiple international conventions that have the force of law in Australia because they have been incorporated in our domestic law. Many times journalists will talk about the UN Declaration of Human Rights and how that's not legally binding because it was an aspirational document. Yeah, true enough, but there are at least seven international conventions that were brought in the subsequent decades that are enforced, that are ratified treaties, that are incorporated in our domestic laws, including the rights of the women, the rights of disability, the rights of children, and all of that. So there's a bit of a furphy going on there. But then also, more importantly, as I said, if leave aside all those conventions, I can argue it on one right and one right alone, the right to life. And if we have the right to life, then necessarily we have the right to the needs of life. Security of person. If somebody's stabbing me, it's not impossible for me to survive, but it does make life a little bit more difficult. You know, then, of course, the right to shelter, because shelter from the elements. You can die from exposure quicker than anything else, except for maybe someone stabbing you or trying to kill you. Then, of course, after that, then you finally look for water and food and basic sanitation and medicines and all that. Now, these are basic needs to support the right to life. Now, if we all agree, and I've not had anyone in my life ever disagree, that we have the right to life, then surely we have the right to what sustains life. Mm-hmm. And yet, instead, we have this ridiculous notion going on in Australia that if we declare war on everything, if we declare war on poverty, if we declare war on homelessness, we're going to ban people being homeless. I had a local shire council.
Ban people from being homeless.
Right, like, okay, exactly. Then. Well, I had a local shire council try to tell me that. They started saying to me, we don't want you to be homeless. Well, great, that makes the two of us. We're on the same team here. We don't want you to be rough sleeping. You can't sleep here. They, fair dinkum, tried to haggle with me on that term. They said, you know, we're not going to give you permission to sleep in the shire. And I said, well, that's okay. I burst out laughing on the phone to their manager. I said, I neither request nor require your permission to live. And I don't. That's what the right to life means. And unfortunately, we got this very hubristic attitude, a very elitist attitude, and ironically enough, from persons who aren't all that elite, because when the questions of law are put to them, and you say to them, okay, on what basis in law are you making this
they
argument?
Don't understand at
all. Well, it's not that they don't understand. They don't want to understand. Mm. They want to pretend, and a lot of unfortunate persons in this country who are not exposed to hardship, who are not the one in the working class families, who are not the single mother trying to figure out, do I give my children food or do I give my children medicine? And then we have obscene ways of dealing with it in this country. When it comes, the whole relationship with food and housing is obscene to the point that, for example, look at our mental health crisis. How do we, as one of the world's wealthiest nations per capita, we're often competing with such countries like Luxembourg and Liechtenstein, countries that are millionaire playgrounds, how are we really in a situation that we're trying to say to our women and children, we're trying to say to our elderly, to our disabled, and to really drive home this point before I finish it, I'm going to segue into a statistic.
We've only got 1 minute.
That's all right. I can talk fast, Anne.
Talk real fast.
In 2025, over 2,500 civilians were killed in Ukraine during an industrial-scale war with 2,000-pound bombs being dropped on people, cluster munitions, mines, artillery shells, all of that. In the same calendar year, over 3,200 civilians were killed in Australia because of preventable and needless avoidable causes of death in the homeless population alone. And that's before we count women in their homes being killed by their own partners.
Thank you very much. That needs no outro from me, except to say you've been listening to Local Food Connections on 3CR. We have been speaking with Anthimos. I hope you agree with me that that was well worth listening to. Until next week, love the land you're on, share your surplus and take care of each other. Remember, if you want to support independent media, you can become a 3CR subscriber. Stay tuned now to 3CR for more radical radio with Latin American update. Bye for now. Thanks so much, Anthimos.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.